Legendary doesn't happen by chance. It happens because it's what BetMGM does. Sign up for BetMGM and check out all the exciting new ways you can make this pro football season unforgettable. Shoot your shot with same-game parlays. Call your plays like a pro with live betting. Or bet on a market you didn't know existed thanks to BetMGM Originals. You'll be on the edge of your seat from the very first snap, no matter what type of fan you are. Earn BetMGM rewards points on every bet. Take advantage of football offers found nowhere else, like a second chance on a first touchdown bet. And keep an eye out for rewards dropping in your account throughout the season. Never settle for the ordinary. Sign up today. BetMGM. Make it legendary.
BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. Specific promotional offers are not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text OPENY 467-369. For Arizona, 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Sixer Sense podcast. I am your co-host, Christopher Klein. I'm here with Michael today. No Lucas, unfortunately. But we are going to talk about the Sixers' Summer League debut in Vegas, among many other things. Michael, how you doing?
Doing good, Chris. How about you?
Doing pretty good. Fortunately, the Sixers are not doing so well. Their opener in Vegas against the San Antonio Spurs was not quite all it was hyped up to be. I think a lot of us were hoping to see the number two and number three pick face off. Dylan Harper, VJ Edgecombe. Seemed like a great matchup. Unfortunately, both were hurt, and this game turned into pretty much a blowout in favor of San Antonio. 111-70 was the final score, Michael. I can't remember that many Summer League games that were so lopsided.
Yeah.
Scoring 100 in the Summer League is not easy. Losing by 40 is not easy either. Kiva Luma led the Sixers in scoring with 12 points on 5 of 10 shooting, but pretty rough all-around performance. We'll go through some of the specific stat lines, Michael, but what were your big takeaways from this game?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, Chris, it was a game on paper that should have been pretty exciting, but it almost felt like a regular season game in the fact that the two guys that you were really excited to watch play didn't even end up playing. You know, it would have been like a really cool opportunity to see the number two and the number three pick go head to head in a battle of like guards. Neither of them played, and without VJ, as has been the case throughout the first, you know, three or four games of the summer, two different summer leagues so far, they just look kind of lost on offense. And like you said, not only was it like a blowout, it was a blowout right from the jump. I mean, within like 5 minutes of that game starting, you just felt like it was one that the Sixers never really were involved in. I think it was 34-12 after the first quarter, and at that point, you know, if it was a regular NBA game with the players out there and the way threes go, like maybe you could expect some sort of a comeback. I think in summer league, it just felt like from that point moving forward, it was kind of a wrap. So, which is tough because obviously the outcome is secondary in summer league, but when it's that out like lopsided right from the jump, it's a little bit tough to evaluate some of what's going on the floor. So it was almost, nothing's like wasted in summer league, but it was just a game that instead of being like living up to the hype and being a really exciting showcase for the two high draft picks, it kind of just turned into like a slop fest that was pretty tough to watch from the Sixers side.
Yeah, there wasn't very enjoyable at all. I think the best part was they did like a mid-game interview with Jameer Nelson in the stands.
Yeah.
Cutting back to him, and he just looked absolutely miserable.
Yeah.
There was one moment where his son, who was playing for the Spurs in Summer League, scored, and they cut to him, and he just looked completely like he wanted to just leave. So it was great. That was nice. So but, yeah, as far as the actual on-court product, I mean, VJ, we should mention, has not played since the opener in Salt Lake City. He scored 28 points, 10 rebounds, 4 assists, looked really awesome. We almost beat a very good Jazz Summer League squad with a lot of NBA players. Then, of course, he gets hurt. Very, very Sixers style. We hear that it's like a minor thumb thing, not a big deal. Naturally, we learn it is a bit more of a big deal. It's a thumb sprain, I believe, is what it has been technically termed. He's supposed to be reevaluated tomorrow, Saturday, July 12th. So, seems like he wants to play. Seems like the Sixers want him to play, but we're going to have to wait and see on that.
Say they want him to play. Does that mean that they actually want him to play? That might be a different story.
I think I'm comfortable. As much as I want to watch him play, I think I'm comfortable with him taking this, being overly precautious at this point in time. But
I mean, just given the Sixers' history, because it just seems like it something freak would happen. I mean, selfishly, obviously, I would love to see a little bit more of him, and especially after that debut where it was, you know, just such a solid performance. We were all excited to see the follow-up, but at the end of the day, this is the Sixers we're talking about. Keeping him in bubble wrap until October is probably a better course of action.
Yeah, can't ever be too safe with this team. I mean, we saw him taking jumpers, I think, pregame yesterday. He looked fine. I don't suspect that this is a major issue, but I've said that about plenty of Sixers injuries at this point, so... I remember when Jared McCain had, like, maybe a concussion, and then it wound up that he had a torn meniscus, so you never know. With this team, I think the big, like, low light in this game, I mean, they were all low lights pretty much, Michael, but Jalen Hood-Schifino, who has a few years in the league under his belt, had 0.0 assists and 6 fouls in 21 minutes. Not feeling great about his NBA projection moving forward. I don't know if you would like to differ on that, but this is guy who played like 20 games for us last year.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I mean, that's a stat line maybe you would expect from a rookie getting his first, like, getting his feet wet in the summer league for the first time. Not a performance you would expect from a guy that's kind of been around the block and might be on his last, you know, last legs at a potential NBA chance. I mean, I thought it was a long shot that he would end up being back, on Philadelphia's roster for next season anyway, given the guard play, but he certainly didn't do himself any favors with that performance.
Yeah, I think we can pretty much rule that out. It's not often that a first-round pick doesn't get to the third year of his contract. So it's been trending this way for a while. That was always kind of a bad pick for the Lakers. All right, Dominic Barlow we need to talk about, Michael, because he is new. He is taking up the third and final two-way slot for Philadelphia alongside Hunter Salas. And who am I blanking on right now? who's the other guy?
Two-way?
Yeah, I know this. I don't know. This is terrible.
Yeah.
Okay, but it's Dominic Barlow and it's Hunter Salas, and it's third guy who I know who's I'm going to be mad at for forgetting. But Dominic Barlow, 8 points, 3 of 5 shooting, 5 rebounds in 14 minutes. He spent time with San Antonio in the past, was with Atlanta last year. Kind of another. Oh, it's Jabari Walker, who we talked about at length in the last episode.
There you go.
Yeah, Dominic Barlow, though, another kind of like forward with some versatility that can maybe bring a bit of rebounding and hustle on the defensive end. Any big takeaways from that signing for you, Michael? Do you think this is a guy who might stick around for a while, or is this kind of just a placeholder?
Yeah, it felt like a signing of need, Chris, given, you know, the lack of forward depth on the roster. I mean, maybe he's a guy that could stick around in Delaware and get called up in the middle of the regular season if, you know, Paul George is banged up or they need a little bit of extra support. I don't see him as a guy that could actually crack the regular rotation of this team moving forward. But I do like, you know, taking a flyer on a guy at a position that you need with some, like you said, a little bit of versatility, a little rebounding, scoring, can do a few things out on the floor. So I think the signing itself was good, but the way the Sixers are built right now, I just don't see a pathway for, you know, much playing time for him in the regular season.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I mean, I think he is probably third on the priority list of the two ways. If I had to take a stab at things, I really like Salas. I think, you know, the guard depth being what it is and really the wing depth too is going to maybe inhibit him a little bit, but I like him as a prospect. I really like Jabari Walker. Does a lot of what Philly needs in the front court. He's played 60 games for Portland last year. I think that's a guy who could quite feasibly maybe crack the rotation. I don't maybe feel that way about Barlow. I think taking swings on power forwards is a smart idea. I kind of wish we had taken more swings of guys who aren't on like two-way contracts, who feel like more rotation guys. We've signed 2 two-way forwards and Trendon Watford on the minimum, which maybe isn't the best forward depth of all time, but Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I think the hope is that Shanai Broome can maybe handle some of those minutes. He finished with 8 points and 5 rebounds in 16 minutes here, Michael, in against San Antonio. What has been your read on Broome so far in Summer League? Are you pro? Are you con? Like, how are you feeling about that pick right now?
It's tough, Chris. I feel like he's been a little up and down, obviously, from what we've seen so far. I thought some of the shooting and the ability to space the floor that we saw early in a couple of the games was promising. I think we've seen a little, like, you know, some not quite as promising stuff since then. It looks like a little bit lost offensively. The shooting's not great. The rebounding is solid. I think, and to me, I think he's the type of guy that he's not really going to dominate anything on his own, but he'll benefit from playing with, you know, better guards and guys that can get him the ball in spots where he's most comfortable. This Sixers Summer League team, you know, is largely playing with what looks like without a guard, or at least like a confident guy that can really get his teammates in the spots where they like to be. I think Broome will benefit from playing with, you know, the likes of Maxey and McCain and Edgecombe, and playing off of Joel when there's the tensions focused elsewhere, and he can kind of just clean up on the glass and do, you know, what's within his role. I think in this Summer League, it's, you know, the lack of the talent around him is, I don't want to say bringing his game down, but it's just hard for him to, you know, I think reach his potential when he's playing with these guys. So I'm still like relatively optimistic about how much he can bring. I am a little worried early on, like you just said, like given the lack of depth at that forward spot, like on paper, there would be a pathway for him to play some major minutes. I don't know what we've seen from Summer League so far. It shows that he's, you know, quite ready for that role. I do think he will be like an NBA caliber rotation player eventually, and probably sooner than later, but literally heading into the season, I'm not sure that he's quite ready to play like really meaningful minutes. So I do hope there's something. I mean, I don't know what it would be. The roster's filling up pretty quickly. But like you kind of said there, the depth of power forward with Watford and then a couple two-way guys, it's just not exactly what you would like to see from a team with, you know, championship aspirations in an open Eastern Conference. So Broome's one of the guys that I think we're watching pretty closely in the Summer League so far. And I think overall, there's been some promising stuff, but I think we might need to pump the brakes like a little bit and expecting him to play like a major role right out of the gate.
Yeah, I generally fall on the, I think, a slightly more positive side with Broome. I think Summer League is just a really bad setting for a player like him. I just don't think this roster specifically is really built to showcase him in any way offensively. Right. He is shooting the three well, which is like a pretty notable development. We'll see if that carries over to the regular season, but he made 2 of 3 in this game. He's been shooting them pretty willingly throughout Summer League so far, so I think that's like pretty encouraging. I thought he looked really good in the Utah opener with VJ on the floor. Like that, the team just in general looked much better with VJ on the floor. I saw one, I forget who posted it on Twitter, but the joke was like VJ's going to be the first Summer League MVP to not play at all in Summer League just because of how bad the team is without him. But I think Broome has a skill set that Philly really needs, and he's just such a good player already. Like this was, again, the best or second best player in college basketball, depending on how you viewed Cooper Flagg at Duke. Like this is a guy who's been really good for a while now. He's an older prospect and maybe the upside is limited as you know, 22, 23 year old who's not very athletic, but he's a really smart player. And I just don't think this is a setting with such poor spacing and guard play around him to really showcase the full extent of his skill set. I think it's kind of exacerbating some of his weaknesses, but I do think he'll look a lot better with a real team around him. So I'm still pretty optimistic on Broome. I think you could argue, Michael, that the best player last night was Mark Armstrong. He had 10 points on 4 of 8 shooting in just 13 minutes. This is a guy who's been in the G League for a minute. Kind of another small shot-creating guard. So I don't know if there's really a path for him in Philadelphia. But did you have any thoughts on Mark Armstrong?
No, like you said, I mean, you like what you see from him, but I just don't see a way where him or, and you know, Mintz had a couple nights games earlier in that Utah Summer League. It's tough to envision like a world where any of these guys on the team right now can really kind of create a pathway in the backcourt. I think there's opportunity in the frontcourt, like we were talking about, if someone really stood out to maybe get some opportunity there. But with the depth that they have in that backcourt right now, it's just tough to see anybody, like whether it be Mintz or Armstrong or anyone else, like really, you know, carving out a role for themselves.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I like what I saw. Maybe he's in Delaware next year, but I doubt he's going to be playing any meaningful minutes in the NBA, at least not in Philadelphia anytime soon. All right, Michael, you ready to talk about some more comments from Daryl Morey here?
Let's do it.
All right. Since the season is kind of edging closer here, we have some more Daryl Morey quotes to talk about. Of Edgecombe, Michael, he said, quote, yeah, so Edgecombe hurt his wrist. Sidebar, I believe he hurt his thumb. I believe he's just misspeaking here, or do we have something else to worry about? You never know. Sort of a day-to-day thing, Morey said. He did parts of practice yesterday, and it'd be more today, and we'll see how it feels. So yeah, we're hoping to have him be back out there. Now everyone's excited, including us and VJ, mostly VJ. VJ is the most annoyed by this. He really wants to be out there, and our medical staff is trying to be smart about it. You know, however we feel about the Sixers medical staff at this point in time, Michael, however we feel about the idea of maybe it's a wrist and a thumb, this was a Freudian slip or not, we don't know, but do you think we are going to see Edgecombe again? Let's just put out like a frank prediction. If you had to guess, gut feeling, are we seeing Edgecombe again in Vegas?
I don't think so, Chris. Unfortunately, like I said, I mean, selfishly, I would love to see him a little bit more. I'd love to see some of the matchups with, you know, the top picks in this draft. But those comments don't make you feel any better. Obviously, like, of course, Edgecombe wants to play. He wants to be out there. I just, you know, the Sixers, we kind of touched on it before. Given their history, it just seems like really unlikely that, you know, they're going to trot him back out there. It seems like keeping him in, you know, off and in bubble wrap basically until training camp is probably the best course of action. Hopefully I'm wrong. There's, you know, the Vegas is a lot of days. It would definitely be cool to see him, you know, just get a little bit more opportunity out on the floor. But if I was a betting man, I'd say we probably not seeing him again. What do you think?
Yeah, I tend to agree. We got another 9 days, and I mean, I guess if he has a really solid, like, again, they're reevaluating him tomorrow with 8 days left in summer league, so we can't rule it out. But like you said, like, selfishly, I want to see him too, but I also would really kind of prefer for them to take this with an abundance of caution just because of what we've gone through with this team. There's no need to risk it in Vegas. I think we generally know that VJ is a good player and he's going to be an important part of this team next year. So there's nothing really to gain from him playing in summer league. He gets more reps as like a ball handler in this setting. And that was like a big thing out of the game against Utah, was like, we just haven't seen VJ handle the ball this much and get to his spots and hit mid-range jumpers like this. But now that we've seen that and we know that he can work on that in the shadows, I think we're fine if he doesn't play again.
Yeah, that's like the only unfortunate part. If they really do want to shift him into the point guard, it would have been nice to get some additional like live reps at the position. But I think they probably saw all they needed to see from him in that first game. Like you said, just the athleticism, the willingness and the ability to get to the mid-range and take it, which was something that was, you know, a big question about him coming into the draft, that he didn't do too much at the college level and then immediately look comfortable doing it at the summer league level. So I think he gave us, both the fans in the front office, just like enough in that first performance to, I guess, hold us over until we get to see him, you know, come preseason and regular season later.
Yeah. Are you buying or selling the whole point guard narrative? Because obviously we have Tyrese and McCain on the roster. I think you could pretty easily argue that those guys are better next to real point guards, but Edgecombe is maybe not a real point guard right now. Obviously, plenty of the offense will run through Joel and Paul George, assuming they're healthy. Seems like Edgecombe will probably start his career, if I had to guess, in more of a wing capacity. But do you think there's like a serious push here to give him more on-ball reps with the real team, or is that just like a summer league experience?
No, I think that's real, Chris. I think that they would like to, because to your point, I do think Maxey and McCain, though they could play lead guard, I think they're probably both better suited playing off ball. I think we saw from Maxey a little bit over the past couple seasons since the departure of James Harden that if there's anywhere where he struggles, it is that lead guard where he can kind of get blitzed. His playmaking ability has definitely improved, but it's still not, I wouldn't put it at like an elite level. And Edgecombe is just so young and so raw that I think if you are going to take any of those guys, and he would be the guy, 19-year-old, like, dynamic athlete, definitely has some playmaking instincts that could be fleshed out and developed more. So, I mean, I like the idea. Obviously, there'd be some little concerns about the size and on the defensive end if you say a backcourt of Edgecombe and Maxey, or Maxey and McCain, with, like, you know, which has basically been the issue since he got drafted. But I do think there's some validity to the fact that, you know, they would like to have a true guard and then other dudes that could play off him. And I think it might benefit both of those guys, like Maxey and McCain and Edgecombe, to kind of have that clearly fleshed out, like, moving forward.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think you could flip that argument towards Edgecombe, too, where he, too, will probably be better with someone else handling the ball, at least early in his career. But yeah. I think it's something they just all need to work on, and they all need to get better, ideally. I think McCain probably has the best feel as, like, a playmaker right now, but he's probably also the best, like, off-ball shooter. So that's a bit of a complicating factor in just how do you want to use Jared McCain. But, yeah, I think Edgecombe is probably going to – it depends on what kind of lineups he's running with, obviously, once we get to the actual season. But I think we'll see a little bit of everything. They've talked about it a lot with the front office. Jarrell Nelson mentioned it on the broadcast. Like, when you pick a guy at three, you're trying to draft a star. And so yeah, they're going to try to give him some kind of star looks in the offense, I think. So I agree that it is probably a real thing.
Especially, you know, in the league today with the emphasis on, like, dynamic point guard play, which we've seen from, you know, both the teams in the finals, obviously, but a lot of the better playoff teams today, it's the engine is an elite point guard as much as, you know, wing players are there. So if the Sixers have this kid that they think they could do that, and it's shown that that's, you know, kind of correlates to winning in the NBA today, I think that would probably push it. And some of that, Chris, obviously is going to fall to Nick Nurse. Like, they can have an idea for him, but at the end of the day, it's going to be up to Nick to figure out how these rotations fall, where guys are most comfortable, and especially like this year coming up with Edgecombe as a rookie. You know, like you said, he probably will be a little bit better suited off ball, if at least at first, while he kind of gets his feet wet and gets acclimated to this, you know, the spot, the size of the guys, the pace of the play, everything. But as the time goes on, maybe he'll grow increasingly comfortable as that lead playmaker and kind of just naturally blossom into that role.
Yeah, that's definitely the hope. I mean, a lot of the comparisons you hear, whether it's like Oladipo or Donovan Mitchell, these are guys who entered the league as kind of off guard, you know, just scoring types who developed more playmaking over time. I think that's the goal with Edgecombe. And I mean, Philly's player development, generally speaking, has been pretty successful. They've drafted really well under Morey. A lot of these guys can scale up in ways we didn't see in college. When you're as athletic as Edgecombe and you can move like that, I have no doubt that he can become like a better ball handler and have no trouble getting to his spots and manipulating a defense. He's got to work on some of the timing and like the dribble cadences and stuff like that, but he can definitely get there. So I'm pretty confident in VJ's upside. As far as the other kind of off-guard scoring defensive wing type we have not talked about yet, Quentin Grimes. Still a restricted free agent, still not signed. It doesn't feel like that's going to happen anytime soon. We've gotten reporting, Michael, that Philly is very confident that they will re-sign him and that they are kind of rebuffing any idea of a sign-and-trade. But when asked about it, Morey said, quote, "We've had discussions and discussions recently with his representation, and we hope to work things out. I don't have much more detail." Kind of a classic GM comment. What do you think the timeline is here? Is this like going to be resolved by the end of the week because no one else has any money to spend, or is this something we're still going to be talking about a month from now?
Yeah, that's a great question, Chris. And honestly, I think it leans toward the latter. This is just like a guess. I don't have inside information on this situation, but it just seems to me like this could be one of those like later summer deals that kind of just gets ironed out when you're not expecting it on like a random day in mid-August. You'll be like sitting at a pool or at a beach and be like, oh, the Quentin Grimes deal got done. Because it just seems like obviously the Sixers are in no rush. And I think Quentin Grimes is trying to, you know, hope that something shakes out of whether it be a trade. We saw like last week the Jazz create a little bit of cap space. And there's opportunities for other teams to do that. And I think Quentin is hoping that, you know, something materializes where he can use it as leverage, obviously, and then go back to the Sixers with an offer that maybe they haven't been willing or ready to make at this point. But at the end of the day, I still think, you know, all reporting and all signs point to, like you said, him ultimately being back. And the Sixers, for their part, are confident, and they should be confident. Like you said, there's not a lot of other teams out there with the cap space to make that move. So it definitely just seems kind of like a holding pattern now where Quentin's side and his representation is hoping that something pops up. The Sixers are pretty content to kind of just like wait it out at this point. And I think a little bit down the road, a couple weeks from now, whether 2-3 weeks up to a month, nothing will pop. If nothing pops up, they'll realize it and be like, okay, and they'll go to the Sixers and try to come up with a reasonable offer that works for both sides. So I think as of like the fan base should still be confident, and just like the front office is that all signs, it's slower maybe than we had anticipated, but it doesn't seem like there's, a great chance that he's going to be going elsewhere.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I mean, from Quentin's perspective, there's really no reason to rush this. Like you said, just even if it's basically a prayer that something magically opens up a month from now, might as well wait. There's no rush. Philly has made it pretty clear that they aren't going to spend money that compromises their ability to re-sign Grimes. So and again, they can match any offer sheet. So barring something pretty substantial opening up, it's not going to be a problem keeping him. But yeah, I mean, we've seen it with the other restricted free agents too. Giddy still hasn't re-signed in Chicago. Kuminga and Golden State are going through what they're going through. We know the Nets don't want to pay Cam Thomas a lot, which is probably wise. Cam Thomas, I'm sure, thinks he's worth $40 million a year. So I think all of those guys are going to be on the market for a minute. I don't see any real sign and trade teams for Quentin Grimes at this point. I mean, Atlanta thing kind of closed up with the Nikhil Alexander-Walker signing. That was the team that Lucas mentioned a couple episodes ago, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, Utah has space, but I feel like that's to take on a bad contract with some picks at the deadline. I don't feel like they're looking to spend money on.
Yeah, he'd be a weird fit in Utah at this point.
Yeah, I think he fits their scheme and what they do, but they just have so many guards in that general mold and size range. It just doesn't seem like, overdoing it a bit. So yeah, he'll be back in Philly. When that happens is really immaterial at this point, as long as it does. So I think as long as all the fans are comfortable waiting, that it'll go well. But as far as the state of the roster, Michael, Morey said, quote, "Well, I think we went with a big goal of being younger and more athletic among the group that we think will likely be on the floor. I feel we've done that. I think around Joel and Paul, I think pretty much every likely rotation player is 27, 28 or younger. So yeah, we're looking forward to that and optimistic on where things are at with Joel. So yeah, looking forward to next season." I like the Joel little aside there is obviously worth noting. We have no concrete understanding of where Joel's knee is at right now, but they have said a couple times now that they're optimistic. And the other important part of that, Michael, is you re-sign Eric Gordon, you re-sign Kyle Lowry. Doesn't seem like they're going to get much playing time. What was your kind of response to this statement?
Yeah, as I side-eyed it a little bit, Chris, because they really didn't do much to address that issue. I mean, the only thing you could really point to is obviously the Edgecombe pick and maybe the Broom pick if you're talking about infusing this roster with young athletic guys that are actually going to crack the rotation here. But I mean, all the moves, obviously some of it was out of their control, Drummond picking up his option, Oubre picking up his option. Those were bound to happen probably, and the Sixers couldn't control that. But then you bring back Lowry, you bring back Eric Gordon, obviously it's almost an identical roster to the roster that you saw all throughout last season, other than the addition of the two rookies. So, I mean, if in terms of the stated goal, we were giving them a grade, if the stated goal was getting younger, I would give them, a C+ just off the strength of how good Edgecombe looks and looks like a guy that could play legitimate minutes, right? Immediately. But in terms of the overall outlook of the team, they're still in the exact same situation they were. The addition of Edgecombe alone isn't enough to carry them to contention if Joel Embiid and Paul George aren't healthy. This is still a team and a roster that hinges completely on the health of two older injury plagued players. And, the infusion of youth that he wanted to bring is not at this point enough to, overcome if they have another situation like last year where Joel can't get out on the court and Paul George is in and out and banged up all season. It's going to be deja vu all over again. So a couple years down the road, I do like the young core that's in place for sure. Obviously the trio of guards, I think Justin Edwards has been a little disappointed with him in summer league, but I think he could still develop into a nice rotation piece, blown up potentially too. But I don't know about this quote from Morey. I feel like he's overstating what they did this summer to kind of improve the roster. Really, if you pull up the depth chart, it looks a whole lot like the depth chart that we saw last year, and we know how that turned out.
Yeah, I think that's fair, though. I do think, like, sometimes like when you add the third overall pick to a team with title hopes, that is like, you know, he's just kind of doing the simple thing, but it had to happen. Like, Edgecombe is going to play 25 plus minutes a game probably next year and be a pretty substantial part of this rotation. He's, what, 19, almost 20 years old.
So, I mean, that's one rotation player.
Well, Trendon Watford is probably going to be a rotation player. He's a few years younger than Yabu. Obviously, if you have confidence in, like, Jabari Walker, that's another younger guy who might be able to crack some minutes down the line. Broom, if I feel like Broom is going to be playing at some point this season. Maybe not like day one, but the way that they have been talking about going into camp and getting younger and giving guys opportunities, I think Broom is a guy who's going to take that opportunity and seize it. I just have a lot of confidence in him, again, as a player. This is a guy I thought should have been a first-round pick, probably. Like, I feel like Broom is going to give them something that they really need with his rebounding and his just defensive IQ. And frankly, his passing. He's just such a good passer in the front court. We still don't have enough good passers on this team. So I kind of buy it. I mean, like, the Eric Gordon thing, you want to, like, pitch him as the mentor for VJ because they both played with the Bahamas team. That's fine. That's whatever. We all knew Kyle was going to be back. It's fine. It's whatever. I think he's a good mentor for Jared McCain and VJ and those guys. Like, McCain clearly loves Kyle Lowry. Like, that's a close relationship, and I think there's some value in that. He knows Nick Nurse's system as well as anyone. I'm not really that mad at bringing Kyle back, but so yeah, I mean, I kind of think Daryl did what he did. I think Justin might be a starter next year. Like, you could pretty strongly make the case for him if you don't start VJ right away. I think with the summer league, like with Justin and Broom and everyone, I'm just kind of wiping this from my memory. I don't think we can take anything meaningful away from this team right now, especially without VJ, because like the guard play is so bad. There's just no one helping these guys get good looks. So I'm comfortable kind of ignoring Justin's struggles so far. But
yeah, and in fairness to Morey too, like, McCain's obviously going to play a much larger role than he did last year, which also needs to be factored in. That's basically like a rookie plus that you're also adding into the rotation with the number three overall pick. So just those two guys being in the rotation alone obviously, you know, brings it down to more athletic. I was just more so talking about like the free agency additions. But you factor in those two guys and Justin Edwards, to your point, like that's three rotation guys that definitely I think will, you know, help with the age situation.
Yeah. I mean the thing with free agency though is they were always just gonna be super limited with space waiting for Quentin. Like, there's really no room to sign anyone other than Watford.
Yeah.
So we can definitely quibble with whether or not Watford was the right use of that one contract spot, because he doesn't necessarily address the things that we need from the forward spot, but he's like Tyrese's best friend.
I think he'll be all right. Yeah, I think he'll be all right.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's good enough to be the starter, which is where the concern comes in, but in terms of like a rotation guy, I think he'll be all right.
So we talked about this last week. I think the ESPN projection was that the starting lineup would be Joel, Paul George, VJ Edgecombe, Quentin Grimes, and Tyrese Maxey with McCain coming off the bench. Is that how you're feeling at this point? Do you think they start VJ day one? How do you kind of feel the starting rotation is going
to
shape up?
That's a great question, Chris, and it's so tough to tell off, you know, one summer league performance that we've saw from VJ. I would think that maybe he comes off the bench that, like, right out of the gate, just as, you know, the rookie McCain. If it's between him and McCain or Grimes, like, you know, I think the little bit of experience will probably get the nod in terms of the starting spot. I mean, unless obviously if VJ goes to training camp and just blows the doors off everyone and is undeniable, which I'm absolutely leaving the door open for after that first summer league performance. I don't think it's written in stone. Like, I would at least hope that Nick Nurse doesn't know exactly yet, and I think that's the cards will fall into place. Obviously, you have to make sure Grimes comes back. I don't love the idea of running Paul George back as the starting power forward. Lack of other options might make it a necessity. He could probably do it. It's not my favorite. I think he's better at the natural, at like the three spot. You go somebody else that can stretch the floor a little bit at the four, and then Joel at the five with, you know, a combination of, if you have Maxey and Grimes and like other guys, and you bring both McCain and Edge come off the bench to start. Like, I think there's a multitude of different ways it could go. So I honestly, My guess is that Edgecombe would come off the bench to start the season just to, you know, get his feet wet a little bit and see how he plays out. But if he's so undeniably good in training camp, like, who knows, maybe he just grabs a starting spot from day one and never relinquishes it.
Yeah, I think that's fair. It's really like a matter of how much do you value the, like, extra size of someone like Justin Edwards. To me, yeah. It feels like it's between Justin Edwards and VJ Edgecombe. Would you agree? Do you think Kelly is maybe still?
I think Kelly Oubre is still in the mix. Nick Nurse was really high on Kelly Oubre last year. Like, I know some fans were down on him, and it was easy to kind of tune out the season. But in the post game press conferences, night in, night out, he would highlight the effort that Kelly Oubre brought, especially on the glass, on the defensive end. Everyone knows he's a guy that is capable of scoring 20 plus on any night. But I think the coaching staff in the front office views him as a legitimate two way guy that you can plug and play wherever. So I do think, I hope he's not given the spot immediately because he started last year, but I do think that he's absolutely going to be in the mix for a starting spot again with both of those guys.
Yeah, I don't mind that. I like Kelly a lot. I'm generally, I think, higher on him than most Sixer fans. I will say, though, I think VJ can handle most of the defensive assignments that Kelly takes on. And I think VJ is probably as good, if not better, as a rebounder, even though he's shorter, just because of how crazy athletic and strong he is. So
I think
in that sense, you draft a guy number three, you're banking on him being a star. I think you took VJ over Ace Bailey with the thought that he's someone who can come in and be more impactful right away. Daryl mentioned that in the quote that I just read out a little while ago. It's going to be hard for me to see VJ, honestly, coming off the bench. He's a rookie and this team is trying to win, so maybe you're right at the end of the day, but I kind of feel like it makes sense, just in terms of maximizing the, you're investing a lot in this guy. You want to maximize that investment.
So
I think as far as the McCain thing, VJ's just so much better defensively. I think McCain's defensive limitations make him probably more suited to the sixth man role right now, but...
Yeah, I was going to say, I think you touched on it. No, you touched on his defense, and so much of the conversation about Edgecombe since he's been drafted has been on the offense and the athleticism and, what he can do on that end. But collegiately, obviously, he was a great defender. He has all the tools, the size, the athleticism, the speed to be a really good defender. And I think if that translates up to the NBA like we think it will, that could be the distinguisher, right out of the gate, even if, offensively he's a little bit up and down is to be expected for a rookie. If he brings it, that effort and intensity defensively, right off the top, that separates guys, especially in the eyes of Nick Nurse, then that, right there, it could wrap up the spot. And that's what I'm really excited to see, too. We saw the athleticism. We know about what he could do offensively, but I'm curious to see if he can really turn into, a lockdown perimeter defender for this Sixer team. And that would really, if he has what he can do offensively combined with that, because that's something both the Maxey and McCain, for all they bring offensively, neither one of those guys is obviously a lockdown defender, to put it nicely. So if you have the offensive production combined with that, that would give Edgecombe a leg up, I think, right there out of the gate.
Yeah, I mean, I think, frankly, you could pretty convincingly argue that Edgecombe is better on defense than he is on offense right now. Over two steals a game at Baylor, this is a guy who is pretty crazy defensive playmaker in college. Yeah, I think, the argument, if you're going to start a forward over Edgecombe, is, you're looking for more rebounding. It's really what the Sixers lack. I don't think you're really getting that from Kelly or from Justin Edwards. Frankly, Edgecombe might out-rebound both of those guys. And as far as the defensive stuff is concerned, I'm pretty sure he will probably average more blocked shots than both of those guys, because he's just covering so much ground. Probably. So even though he's 6'4", and it looks really small on paper, I think you get more of the important power forward stuff almost from VJ than you would from either Kelly or Edwards. So, I mean, unless Boom is just undeniable, he's the guy who fits the ideal of what you want next to Joel, I think, the most. But you're starting VJ, I think. So it's definitely a size concern, but I.
So do you think, Chris, are you saying then Maxey, Grimes, and Edgecombe? Do we think Grimes, assuming he's back, do we say Grimes is a definite in a starting spot?
I don't know if it's definite, but I feel like if you're going to pay him the money and you believe in what we saw last year, again, he's also a very good defender. You will need to get stops on the perimeter if you're not going to rebound and you're not going to have a lot of size down there. Around Joel, I think surrounding Joel at this point in his career with a bunch of really solid perimeter guys who can just stop penetration and kind of lower his workload in the paint is smart. Grimes, Edgecombe, and Paul George, in theory, can all get stops. Like, those are all plus defenders on the wing. Maxey got a lot better last year as far as defending his position. He's not great, but, like, it improved pretty substantially, and he was getting some stops in key moments before he got hurt. So I think you can kind of talk yourself into that being a pretty good defensive team with a really high offensive ceiling. Like, I think that's a really great offensive team on paper.
Yeah.
Especially VJ can kind of take the ball handling leap. So, yeah, I really think it works. Like, I would say right now that I think starting VJ is the best option.
Yeah.
I'm open to changing my mind if we get to the season and that's not really the case. You never quite know with rookies, of course, but if VJ is what we think he is,
yeah.
I think he will be the starter by the end of training camp.
I think
Nurse is going to like this kid.
No, definitely. I don't disagree. And then, you know, you have a nice little trio off the bench in that backcourt. McCain, Oubre, Edwards. Like, those are three, you know, reliable, like, solid guys to bring in off the bench. So, I mean, it could work on paper for sure.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Bona is probably going to be the backup five.
Yeah.
I think Broom and Watford are going to kind of compete for those forward minutes. Then you have, like you said, Edwards and McCain and Oubre are kind of your perimeter. I think that's your 10.
Yeah.
I don't really see anyone else breaking into that 10 right now. I'm a little worried that Eric Gordon's going to sneak in there. But
I was going to say, you know, Nick Nurse is going to find a way to get Lowry and Gordon some minutes.
I mean, Gordon, I can kind of see it a bit more. He was fine last year. I think we are maybe collectively overstating how bad Eric Gordon was last year.
Yeah, it was just the badness of the season kind of overshadowed his. I mean, he would have been even better if, you know, the health thing. Like, he's still a guy that can spot up and space the floor. So, I mean, if Embiid and Paul George are healthy, the way he's talked about in Philly, that being Eric Gordon, is probably a lot different than it has been.
Yeah, like, if Eric Gordon ends up being the 10th guy over Kelly Oubre or whatever, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. But I generally think, with everything that they've said so far, that it will probably be Kelly and Justin Edwards on the wing, mostly.
Yeah. I think, I mean, I do think Kelly Oubre, even if he doesn't start, which is, you know, likely and probably the best case, I do think he's still a guy that's going to play a substantial. I mean, I would not be surprised to see him play like 20 minutes a game again, like, for sure.
Yeah, I think Kelly's good. I agree. All right, are you ready to talk about LeBron James here for a little bit, Michael?
Always ready to talk LeBron.
Got to do it. All right, so the reporting today from Jovan Buha, formerly of The Athletic, Lakers insider, said, quote, "I want to be careful with what I say about Bron's relationship with the front office or the Lakers organization, but I don't think it's in, like, the best place right now, to be completely honest. There's been no official statement about LeBron opting in. There typically is, especially for a player of that magnitude. Of note, another report today was that Luka kind of got prior notice about the Lakers being sold from the Buss family. LeBron did not. LeBron opted into his contract. He is an expiring, soon-to-be free agent for the first time in his career with no control beyond this season, Michael. What's your read on this? Is LeBron, I think, frankly, we saw today, wasn't the report that the Lakers are just done with LeBron after the season? Is this his last year in L.A.?
It seems like it's going that way, Chris. It definitely seems like the two sides are, you know, heading toward an eventual split. Does that mean he finishes back in Cleveland? You know, that, which would be interesting. But I think it's fair for LeBron to feel like some type of way. Obviously, I mean, anyone that good is going to have, you know, a certain pride and a certain ego. And I think, you know, the reporting is LeBron doesn't blame the Lakers, obviously, for going to get Luka. It kind of just, like, fell in their lap. But if, you know, for him and evaluating where he is in his career and what he has left in the tank, like, it's fair to wonder if he thinks that the Lakers are the best spot for him to be in. If you look at it on paper, they're probably not. I mean, this organization hasn't really done a great job of filling out this roster around him since, like, that 2020 title run. They've lost some key pieces, made some misses and other additions, and I feel like it's maybe kind of been brewing under the scenes a little bit of, like, a discontent on both sides. I think bringing Luka in obviously gives the Lakers an out where they can kind of redirect the, you know, direction of the organization and move forward with, you know, a new young star and a face of the organization. And I think, you know, LeBron obviously is entitled to feel a certain type of way about that. So I do feel like the more reporting comes out, like that this is going to continue to be a thing. I don't think this is just like a one-off situation. Like, I think this has some validity to it, and I'm very curious to see, you know, how it continues to play out.
Yeah, I agree pretty much wholeheartedly. It seems like he's like either he's going to retire at the end of the season or he's going to go somewhere else. I think that seems to be the pretty clear outcome at this point. It's hard for me to imagine him being traded, though I will say it's like a little bit, I think, egregious that the Lakers are essentially punting on two seasons with LeBron James and Luka Doncic on their roster. Like, I understand wanting to maintain cap flexibility so that you can rebuild around Luka quickly when LeBron leaves. That's like an understandable desire. But you have Luka Doncic and LeBron James on your team. These are like two top 10 players still. Luka may be a top 3-4 player when he's at his peak. You should be trying to win like all out right now. I know the West is pretty ridiculous, but to not go all in with this group is, I think, a little disappointing if you're a Lakers fan. As far as LeBron is concerned, I think you're right about Cleveland. Like, if he does get, you know, if he does leave as a free agent or if he gets traded, I think the Cavs are the obvious, like, top landing spot. Do you see any path here to him ending up in Philly, Michael? We have to tie it back to the Sixers, of course. Philly was, like, theoretically the number two before he signed in LA. I think that was mostly a leverage ploy, as we understand it now. But do you think there's any way that he ends up, whether it's like a Paul George trade or a buyout, whatever, do you think there's any way he ends up in Philly?
I would always take LeBron, Chris. I mean, I still to this day. And it's funny, like, the conversation about LeBron and the way some people talk, you think he's, you know, a guy that's a typical NBA player on his last legs. Like, he was still, like you said, a top 10 player in the league last year, a major difference maker, and a guy like that is still worthy of building around. So I agree with you wholeheartedly that the Lakers approach, or, you know, what, I don't want to say they're like showing him the door or anything like that, but I understand from, at least from the outside perspective, like why he might feel a certain type of way about how they've kind of approached his, you know, twilight years here in LA. I don't really see a scenario where he would land in Philly. I might be in the minority, but I would still totally be in favor of it. I still think he's a guy that could absolutely, like, help propel a team to a championship or a, you know, conference finals appearance, especially in the Eastern Conference, as we know, which is pretty open, pretty decimated with injury. And if we're talking the short term and you are able to bring him in and pair him with Joel, who's, well, he still has some, you know, gas left in that tank and whatever else is left. I mean, I think 100% you would do it, but I just don't see a way. I don't see a way that would happen. I don't know if he would want to do that. I don't know if at this point, like you said, there did seem like a time, maybe we were just being a little bit optimistic. There did seem like a time in the world where, hey, like, maybe LeBron would come to Philly. We had some momentum. We had some young guys on the side. We're kind of on the other side of that now. I don't know that it would be the most attractive destination for him to want to follow through. And I don't know that the Lakers would be wanting necessarily to take on Paul George or whatever else would be coming back to them. So, you know, it's something that I would love to see, honestly, still. But I just don't see it happening. Unless, you know, maybe I'm missing something. What about you? Do you see any way it could happen?
Yeah, not really. I tend to agree. I mean, if their goal is to maintain cap space for 2027, they're just not going to take back Paul George's contract. So,
I mean, LeBron is still clearly better than Paul George. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like,
I do that in a heartbeat, obviously, if I'm in the Sixers front office. But I don't see that happening for a multitude of reasons. If he does get bought out, which I also really don't see that happening, because there's no reason to buy out his contract if you're the Lakers, you still have maybe a little bit of a chance this year, even with this roster, because of how good him and Luka are. If he gets bought out, he's going to Cleveland. I think that's like pretty much sign, sealed, delivered.
Seems like it.
Yeah, I mean, the only way it happens is if we get to the midway point of the season, the Lakers are just complete garbage, and LeBron is forcing his way out the door, and Philly is healthy, and they're the number one seed in the East, and they have momentum. If we get to that point in the season and Philly is just back, we're like, man, the Sixers might actually do it this year. The East stinks. And then LeBron gets bought out or whatever. And then maybe he signs on for like a title run. But that is just like the pipe dream of pipe dreams. I find it very hard to believe that we would end up in that particular situation. So I feel like he's probably going to finish the year in LA. There'll probably be a first round exit in the playoffs. I don't think DeAndre Ayton is that guy, unfortunately.
I don't know. If Lucas is on here, he might disagree with you.
I know. Unfortunately, Luca isn't here, or Lucas isn't here, nor is Luca. But
Luca's not here either, unfortunately.
Ayton was on.
So wait, TV, do you think there's a world, Chris, where do you think there's a world where this is LeBron's last season?
I definitely think it's possible. He keeps opening the door for a reason, right? Like, he keeps talking about it. I don't really know what the Bryce James NBA future looks like at this point. I feel like LeBron's getting close. Yeah. I don't know if he really wants to move out of LA. In his heart of hearts, he's done so much to stay there. They've been like I understand why he's frustrated with the front office's like unwillingness to just go all in, but this has been a problem for like 5 years now. It's been an ongoing issue. Yeah. They've been kicking the can down the road forever. This is not the first time it's been a problem. So he's gone out of his way to stay in LA even when they weren't really a contender. So I don't know if he really wants to go move back to Cleveland. I guess he already has a home in Cleveland or whatever, but he lives in LA right now. So yeah. Cleveland, New York, if he does hit free agency and leaves next year, it'll probably be Cleveland or New York, right? Like,
yeah. I mean, you would think so.
Realistic, yeah. Maybe Miami if they're good this year, but I kind of doubt that.
And to me, he's like, I just don't think this would be his last year because I mean, I love LeBron, respect him, but if there's one thing, he is a little vain, and he just seems like a retirement tour guy to me. Like, when he does retire, he seems like a guy that's going to want that full season of like the standing ovations in every arena when he plays for the last time, and like the nods of respect that, you know, we got to see Kobe get and like these other guys that have retired recently. To me, like, that just seems like right up LeBron's alley. I mean, who knows? Maybe he'll pull a fast one, do the opposite, and all of a sudden just announce his retirement, but he just seems like a retirement tour guy to me.
Yeah, I think that's the argument for like going to Cleveland on like the minimum next summer or the mid-level or whatever. Like, that's a good team. If he just goes there on a super discount, like,
yeah,
that team is pretty clearly the favorite in the East all of a sudden. So that would be the best way to do the retirement tour if you're him. Maybe the Clippers. Maybe he just goes across town.
Yeah, wouldn't have to move or anything.
With Kawhi and James, but that's kind of an older group too. But yeah, I do not see him ending up in Philadelphia, unfortunately, as much as I would like to see it happen. All right, we're ready to go around the NBA, Michael.
Let's do it.
What do you want to talk about?
It's a good question, Chris. What is going on? I guess we could touch on Cooper Flagg's summer league debut last night.
Yeah.
Did you get to watch that?
I did. 10 points, 5 of 21 from the field. I'm interested to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, like, to your point multiple times, I don't judge summer league too harshly. I think, you know, the first time a guy's on the floor, there's obviously going to be some growing pains. I think he, from that game specifically, compared to like what we saw at Duke, I think he pretty quickly learned the difference between college ball and quickly learned the difference between college ball and even like NBA summer league ball in terms of like the size difference and speed and athleticism difference. You just saw like some of the moves that he would have done at Duke and pretty easily score, or at least like generate open looks for himself. They weren't there, especially in the second half where he kind of was struggling and pressing for shots a little bit. You saw some really tough contested like fadeaways and like turnaround jumpers and stuff that were just tough looks for anyone, and they weren't falling for him. I think that's something that, you know, it's going to come with time and it's going to be growing pains. But yeah, like the ease that he was able to use his size and athleticism advantage in college is going to disappear pretty quickly at the NBA level. So he's going to have to, you know, obviously just like develop his game and figure out. But I think you saw a lot of like the various things that he can bring to the floor. I was really impressed with his ability to just like get a defensive rebound and immediately turn it into like a transition opportunity and get down the floor quickly. He was like blown by some of the guys that were like on the wing quicker, getting up to in like transition. You definitely saw a lot of the potential there. I think the scoring is, you know, it's going to come with time, but definitely like some of the stuff in college that he was able to be so successful with is not necessarily going to work in the NBA. And I think he got a taste of that, right off the bat in that game.
Yeah, I tend to agree. Like, I think he mostly played well, like aside from the shots not falling. Like, I thought he was pretty impactful for the most part, especially on defense, like you said. Like, he did a lot of things at a really high level, so I don't think this was, like, a super worrying performance. Scoring, like you said, in summer league is just kind of a wonky thing. It's not something to write home about. He'll have a lot more help with, like, the full roster, especially once Kyrie is back. It'll be interesting to see how they use him before Kyrie is back. I know Jason Kidd has mentioned, like, Point Cooper as an option. Frankie, with where that roster is, that might be their best option. Like, they're going to do it, and it might not be the worst idea, honestly, just with where that roster's at. I don't know if that's the best for Cooper right now, but he's going to have a lot on his plate pretty soon, even with a team that is supposedly trying to win a championship. But, I'm not too worried about it. On the other side, 8 points for Bronny James. He looked good. Like, the thing with Bronny is, like, I think higher on him the most. I had him in my top 60 last year. I had him in my top 15 coming out of high school. This is, like, I think he's a real player, and, like, obviously the heart attack set him back at USC, and it was kind of a tough season for him, but I mean, he's like a legit defender. He has a really high feel for the game. He's undersized. Like, he's like kind of like if VJ was even smaller somehow and not quite as athletic. It's a really bad comparison. But like some of the complaints you might hear about VJ Edgecombe, you can kind of map onto Bronny in a much smaller scale. I don't think he's going to be a star or anything. But I think Bronny will be like a guy who sticks around the league for a little bit. I don't think it's like a case where he's just going to get cut as soon as his dad retires. Yeah. So, like, he looked better than Dalton Knecht. I really do not think Dalton Knecht is going to be very good. I'm pretty worried about him, to be completely frank, but Bronny looked good out there. He's getting comfortable. So I think that's nice to see.
No, I was just going to say, I agree with that. I think Bronny has the makings of being a legit rotation player in the NBA. Like, he's never going to be his dad. He's never going to be a star, but I do think that some of the conversation around him has just gotten so wonky and overblown, like whether or not he deserved to be drafted wherever. But the product that we've seen from him, there's, you know, the shot hasn't really fully come around. But yeah, he looks like a guy that could be like a rotation piece for sure.
That's the thing. He's just been in such a tough spot because of who his dad is. The discourse was always going to be just overinflated and ridiculous. But
yeah,
I think he has like a real shot to stick. I know a lot of teams last year said, oh, we would have taken Bronny if we were allowed to, that kind of thing. I know Phoenix said that specifically. I mean, was that partially Phoenix, like, trying to lure LeBron or whatever? Maybe. But I do think there's some truth to that. Like, I think he's always had something of interest, especially as a second-round pick. You just don't find that many 19-year-olds in the second round. You can think the game at the level that Bronny does and who have that level of, like, defensive competence. So I think there's, like, real stuff there. But
yeah. I mean, I'm rooting for him. You know, I want to see him succeed. I hope it works out. It'll be interesting to see how that plays in, you know, what we were just talking about with the LeBron situation. Like, it's hard to imagine LeBron, like, going through all that, getting Bronny drafted to the Lakers just to be like, all right, like, I'm good, I'm leaving. But, you know, it might happen. It'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, that would be very funny if Bronny outlasts LeBron in LA.
Yeah,
I don't think that was on very many people's bingo cards, but
definitely not mine.
Yeah, that I think that was kind of the big story from last night, Michael. I can't really think of anything else major that's happening right now. Free agency is kind of dead at this point. We're just waiting on. So okay, I'll throw this out real quick: Josh Giddey, Jonathan Kuminga, Cam Thomas. Are any of them going to end up with different teams than they started with this summer?
I think Cam Thomas is interesting just because, A, I don't know how much the Nets want to pay him. And to your point, I'm sure he would like the biggest bag possible. And like his, you know, I could see a team. It's just tough with the landscape of the league. Like the money is pretty dried up for some of these guys. And you don't know if the opportunity is going to even be there for any of them too. So like the sound money, it's probably on all them staying put just based off kind of the way things have shaken out. But Cam Thomas, to me, is just like a guy that I think other teams could talk themselves into pretty quickly, given his like microwave ability, you know, just coming in and like scoring crazy points. If you have a team where you think you're pretty solid, but you could just use like a spark, I think you could pretty quickly talk yourself into throwing some money at Cam Thomas. And I, like I said, the Nets have just been hard for me to read for the past like few, basically since like the Durant Kyrie thing. Like, I don't really know their direction. We talked about their five draft picks and how they use them, and the way their roster is constructed right now, it's kind of just like a little bit wonky to me. So I wouldn't be shocked if they were willing to get out of the Cam Thomas business if another team was, you know, willing to throw some money at him. So I think out of those guys, he would probably be my pick if someone was going to move.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think my general stance is that none of them are going to change teams. I think, yeah, Kuminga, there's still like some sign and trade interest. I worry about what Sacramento is cooking. But
yeah,
so I would say Kuminga's probably, if I had to pick, the guy who's most likely to change teams right now, just because we've heard of interest from other teams, and we know Golden State doesn't really like him. We know that Chicago likes Josh Giddey. I don't know if Brooklyn likes Cam Thomas, but I don't think they hate him. And with what the roster is going to look like next year, I think of all the four guys, you throw Quentin Grimes into the mix too. We've heard some talk about, will people just take the qualifying offer and hit free agency next summer? I think that's way too risky for Grimes. I think that's way too risky for Giddey.
Yeah.
And probably is for Kuminga too, though you could see it with Kuminga. Cam, on the other hand, he could just pick it up, go average 25 a game for a really crappy team, and then go to free agency. I know that Cam Thomas, the reporting is that he wants his money. I have no doubt that he is full of self-belief. So he's the one I could definitely see, like, just picking up the qualifying offer and being like, I'm going to hit unrestricted free agency next summer and sign a four-year, $120 million contract. With,
yeah, kind of just like bet on himself. Yeah,
I don't know if that would be a successful bet. I don't think he's going to alleviate many concerns about his game while he's scoring 25 a night for a really bad Nets team, but I could see that. Brooklyn's summer league debut last night was pretty interesting. It's really quite a collection of players that they've put together, so I'm interested to see how that plays out for them. But yeah, it'll be fun. We still have something to talk about for the next month at least. So
yeah, for sure.
Yeah. With that, we will wrap things up. As always, everyone, thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Sixers Sense podcast. Please like, subscribe, follow along if you can. We are on YouTube at the Sixers Sense. You can follow us on Twitter at Sixers Sense. I am at ClenNBA. Michael is at the Real Mike KB. You can follow Lucas, even though he's not here, at CoachJ_20. We are on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Play as well. And we will be back soon to talk more Sixers. So until then, peace out.
Peace.
We'll see / talk to you soon.
Legendary doesn't happen by chance. It happens because it's what BetMGM does. Sign up for BetMGM and check out all the exciting new ways you can make this pro football season unforgettable. Shoot your shot with same-game parlays. Call your plays like a pro with live betting. Or bet on a market you didn't know existed thanks to BetMGM Originals. You'll be on the edge of your seat from the very first snap, no matter what type of fan you are. Earn BetMGM rewards points on every bet. Take advantage of football offers found nowhere else, like a second chance on a first touchdown bet. And keep an eye out for rewards dropping in your account throughout the season. Never settle for the ordinary. Sign up today. BetMGM. Make it legendary.
BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. Specific promotional offers are not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text OPENY 467-369. For Arizona, 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Life is unpredictable, but preparing for the unexpected shouldn't be. Take ownership of your life planning with Policy Genius to help your loved ones have a financial safety net in case something happens to you. They offer life insurance policies starting at just $276 a year, for $1 million in coverage. Don't wait for life to make other plans. Protect your family today. Head to PolicyGenius.com. That's PolicyGenius.com.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.